Hello and welcome to the Virtual Clinical Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Sunderland. This is a spot where nurses share their stories and their experiences to provide mentorship as well as help nurses and soon-to-be nurses just like yourself along the way. I hope you enjoy these episodes. Welcome to Season 5, Episode 1 of the Virtual Clinical Podcast. I am joined today with my friend and colleague, Brianna Blackburn. Hopefully I pronounced your first name correctly.
You did.
Great, I love that. And I'm excited. Brianna has lived such a life and has such a really amazing career already. So I'm excited to talk to her about that today. I'm excited to share her with you. So let's just dive into it. Why did you start nursing? Like, what made you go into the field of nursing?
I always had an interest in like science. That was always like a natural thing that made sense to me. So I always kind of saw myself going into a field that utilized science in some kind of way. But when I was in high school, I got pretty sick with mono, which is not terribly uncommon for teenagers. You know, it's called the kissing disease, and many people have it, and it's sort of a short-term illness. But for me, for some reason, it actually really took a toll, and I ended up hospitalized for a couple of days. And that was my first run-in with nurses in the inpatient setting. I had always been healthy and had never really spent much time in a hospital. So I spent a couple days there as an inpatient and was just enamored with the role of the nurse and how they juggled so many things at one time. I was in a shared room, and so I was very nosy and like watched them deliver care to my roommate in the pediatric unit. And from there, my decision was made. I was going to be a nurse.
That's awesome. So you went to Widener, which is not too far from where I grew up.
Delco. What's up? Delco.
Can't have a podcast without a little shout out to Delco. Your decision to go to Widener was based on what? Just a great program, the school, for the first school that let you in.
I had been accepted to a few nursing programs, but Widener, I made that selection for a couple reasons. First of all, it was the best financial decision. They were willing to give me an academic scholarship. And also, I was looking to get away from kind of my like suburban upbringing. And yeah. Widener, for anyone that isn't familiar, is very urban. It's just outside South Philadelphia, and definitely has both the good and the bad of like an urban setting. But I knew that I would have access to many different hospitals, a lot of which were pretty prestigious, and that I was going to have a really solid like clinical education there. So that was ultimately what led me to Widener, and it was one of the best decisions I've ever made. I have no regrets for that choice. And even now, 10 years after I've graduated, I look back and like can see like the high quality of education I got both like in and out of the classroom there.
That's awesome. I went to Westchester.
Mm-hmm. And a different kind of Chester.
A different kind of Chester. Widener's to the left of Chester, PA. And that's a very interesting place that I don't recommend you just go to. But Widener campus was widely attended by folks of my high school. And I got my degree from Westchester, like I mentioned. And faculty from there have now transitioned to Widener. And I've always loved their nursing program. I was an extern some time ago, very long time ago. And the level of students, like the... I don't know how to describe it. It was just really omnipresent when you were working with somebody who attended Widener nursing. It was just one of those things. And that is very present as well in many schools in the Philadelphia region. Like, you kind of know where people go based on like who they are and how they act. So I was always very interested in Widener's program in terms of like maybe teaching there one day. I don't know. But I've always found value when folks have gone to programs that I know other people have gone to and they've said great things about it, because they too have said great things about it. So really glad that you've had a great opportunity there as well to experience the hospitals around there. I'm sure you've experienced. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Widener was really focused on like training the next generation of leaders, mm-hmm. and particularly like civic leaders.
Okay.
So a big focus on service learning and community engagement and being a good citizen. And okay. I don't find that to be a focus for many schools. It may be mentioned, but it's not really like part of the curriculum.
Right. I agree. It was
part of the curriculum there. And at the time, I can't say I appreciated it as much as I do now, but I understand like the role of the nurse as a leader and as a member of the community and as like a role model for like their neighbors and
yeah.
the future of our like world.
I feel like this probably carries over to your adventures that we'll talk about later,
mm-hmm.
in terms of being very civic minded. And I really love hearing that from a school of nursing, because you're right, like there's not many schools of nursing that press a lot of emphasis on just being a good human and civic minded and really caring about the people within the community or a community that is impacted in such a way that they need your help to help them out. So after Widener, where was your first job and what did you do?
So I'll back it up just a bit. My yeah. year before graduating from Widener, I had mm-hmm. a nurse externship, which I heard you mention you had one as well. And that was a really big piece of like where I started my career. And I did that at the Good Samaritan Hospital, which is in Lebanon County, my hometown. Okay. And I was in peri-anesthesia. So I did like pre-op, PACU, and then I was able to do some like intraoperative stuff. It was an amazing experience. Even after my externship was over, I was able to remain on staff there and take call on the weekends for like emergent surgeries and things like that. It was just really my first exposure beyond school to like inpatient medicine, and the OR is such a specialized place. It felt like a whole new world. I had wonderful role models there. I was very much mentored and cared for and like always made to believe that I was going to do great things in nursing. So that was a really solid start for me as in nursing before I even like graduated from school. But I did learn there that like surgical services didn't really fit my personality. I like to interact with patients and they're asleep or about to go to sleep or just about to wake up when they're engaging yep. with you in that area. So I was just looking for a little bit more interaction. So my first job out of nursing school was at the time Pinnacle Health, Harrisburg Hospital, on a med-surg unit. And that's where I started, and I stayed there for 3 years.
And much more talking to patients, I'm sure.
Lots of talking to patients in med-surg, yes. A wide variety of patients.
Did you find it easy to transition from the life of a student to your first role as a nurse in med surg? Because I love talking about, you know, for me, I was kind of like in between a med surg and like an ICU, but it was weird, right? And for others, they have started their careers on different units. And there's always people that tell you to start in one place because that's what you should do. But I don't agree, right? I think it's up to you. I think it's up to the skills you have. But I'm curious, like, you know, did that really help you transition to nursing much more? And, you know, did the fact that you had a PACU job and the OR impact, hey, MedSurg is a great place to start to talk to patients as well?
Yeah, this is such a loaded question. I think that it's a big controversy in nursing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get a lot of mixed opinions about like what you should or shouldn't do out of school. There's the old school people that will say, well, you got to start in med surg. And I definitely heard that. That's not why I started in med surg.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in agreement with you that everyone is different. And as long as you're being honest about your own knowledge, your skills, your goals, and that you've like done the work to understand like what you're getting yourself into, I think that there's no right or wrong place to start your nursing career.
Yeah.
For me, MedSurg made the most sense because number one, I needed a job. Like I didn't have time to like mess around applying to different places, trying to get into a specialty. I needed a job. That was just my reality. And I needed a place that I was going to be able to start like pretty soon after graduation. And mm-hmm. I did not want to waste any time.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing was I did know I wanted that interaction, and I wanted like a broad foundation for my career.
Yeah.
Because I didn't exactly know where I wanted to take it. I had some interest in critical care, but it really intimidated me at that time. I thought that, like, you know, maybe I would explore some specialties, but MedSurg seemed like a good place to start. Those were the hardest nursing years of my life, working full-time MedSurg, and I don't like to gloss over that, but I also have no regrets starting there. And I look at my career today and I feel very confident that I would not be here had I not put my time in on that MedSurg unit.
Yeah, I bet.
Gained a lot of skill, both from a nursing perspective, but also like a resilience perspective. I know a lot about a lot of things. I'm not an expert in one particular area of nursing, but I'm very confident in my skill, and I feel like the MedSurg gave me like a solid foundation.
Yeah, I think that that's amazing that you mentioned how broad MedSurg is. And how much actually of a specialty the broadness of MedSurg can be, because it, you can deal with so many different people within the floor at the same time. At least in my experiences of like going to a MedSurg unit, patient assignments are usually generally spread out a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And there's hospitals that do it kind of differently from others. So there's hospitals where you'll have a floor with just mix of every kind of surgical service, med service. It doesn't matter what it is. You know, the patient has a bed here. There are other organizations that have specialized med surge units now.
Right.
And I don't know if I'd agree or disagree with that. I think it's an interesting concept, because I think that from what you're mentioning is that you've gained so much experience within that short 3-year period of time, because you saw everything, that, you know, sometimes I think maybe the MedSurg units where they're so specialized might miss out on the generalness of things. And, you know, sometimes those skills, like getting a wound dressed, escalating some sort of concern to a physician of like something, right, pain or whatever, might be missed in other specialties. So I think it's great that you started in MedSurg, and kind of mentioned that too to students that listen, in terms of you don't have to always go to what somebody has said you need to go to, right? You're going to get the experience no matter where you go. I think it's also important that you reflect on that time of resiliency and how that impacted your decisions that you've made after that first role.
Yeah. The unit that I was on was that very general MedSurg that you talked about. And like my ability to like meet people where they were at, take care of people from all different walks of life, age 18 through end of life. The time management skills that I gained there have continued to serve me in my life, both inside and outside of my career. I agree with you that MedSurg is a specialty. I'm certified in MedSurg and I carry that very proudly.
I'm certified, everybody. Sorry.
One of the, things that I'm very passionate about is that we need to stop talking about MedSurg like it is the bare minimum. We need to stop talking about it like it's just a stepping stone to something bigger and better, and that, oh, you know, ICU, ER, CRNA, all these like specialized areas are better than the floor. And that is going to be a really tough culture change, but it's something that I'm passionate about, is like understanding that MedSurg has a really key piece in the larger healthcare system, and those skills are specialized in their own way.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think, you know, coming from a critical care background primarily is where I spent most of my career anyway. If I'm not receiving report from a MedSurg nurse that has their things together and those skills that they have entrusted in themselves and learned over time and time again, it can be quite the problem to receive that patient. And conversely, if that nurse has done everything they can and they've detailed it and all that stuff, I trust the MedSurg unit so much more than that MedSurg nurse. I think it's one of those things that needs to begin to work together, as opposed to saying, oh, well, you work there, oh, well, you're never going to be an ICU nurse, or you're never going to be this, or that unit is not that great because of X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, we as nursing, generally speaking, have yet to find what meshes us so well together, like med-surg, ED, PACU, ICU, all that stuff. And we need to get away from the toxic belief system of, oh, this ICU is way better than this ICU because of this patient population, right? That's what I hear all the time. Yeah. Or this med-surg unit is better than this med-surg unit or something else. I think it's just toxic. And I agree. It's going to take a while to get to where we're comfortable just talking about and supporting each other from a med-surg perspective to an ICU perspective. But I believe it'll get there, especially if you keep talking about it and keep pressing the issue.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I agree.
So after the 3 years of med-surg nursing, where did you go next?
To be perfectly honest, I was very burnt out
okay.
at that point, and a lot of that was my own doing. I had picked up a lot of overtime, and I got used to that paycheck, and then it was hard for me to give that up. I was a chronic, volunteer. Like, if the unit needed something, a representative on this committee or a spokesperson for this, I was always the first to step up. I had a hard time saying no. So I got very burnt out. And I knew that wasn't going to be my forever place. And so I needed to look for something different. And all of that volunteering did pay off because I was able to make some connections. And through one of those connections, I heard that they were looking for an educator for their nurse residency program. So one thing led to another, and I landed in that role. And pretty soon after I started, I realized that if I wanted to be good at this and if I wanted this to move forward, I was going to need to advance my education. So pretty soon after I started in my nurse residency coordinator role, I enrolled in my MSN program. And then I worked towards my MSN and worked in that nurse residency coordinator role for 4 years.
Now, I want everyone to realize that being a nurse residency coordinator is no easy feat. It's very impressive that you went from med-surg nursing to expressing, periods of burnout and things like that. And then said, you know what? I'm going to be a GN nurse residency coordinator, and I'm going to be really good at this. And dove yourself right in, because GN residency can be either one unit or it can be the whole hospital in itself. I imagine yours was like a whole hospital thing.
It was. And I have to be honest, I didn't know what I was signing up for. And sometimes that's a blessing and sometimes it's a curse. In this case, it was a blessing because I just took the challenges as they came. Yeah. And the role really evolved with me. It was a fairly new role at the time.
Yeah.
But yes, I had responsibility over new graduate nurses entering the organization at 3 different hospital sites at the time.
That's a lot.
And it was, however, my full-time job, which many nurse residency coordinators out there will tell you that they have additional responsibilities. And that was not the case with me. I was very lucky to make that my full-time focus, and it paid off. And I
That's awesome.
Had a lot of professional successes during my years in nurse residency. And that's really where I found my passion for supporting nursing students and new grads and recognizing how big the transition to practice gap is from mm-hmm. academia to practice.
Mm-hmm. So did that help your transition then to more academia nursing and education of that realm? Or was that something that totally happened different and you're like, I kind of need to change again and want to do something different?
I had planned to stay in my residency role for as long as they'd have me. It was a job that I absolutely loved. Mm-hmm. And I really, sorry, I got distracted by my dog.
That's okay. You can bring the dog on camera if you want to. we love animals on this podcast. We love kids. We love all the things.
Well, I really loved that job and I had planned on doing it for as long as they would have me. But through a series of events, I started to become more and more interested in academia. And one of those reasons was I felt that nurse residency, and I still feel to this day, holds incredible value, but we were always half a step behind. The students were already, the new grads were already experiencing the struggles with transition by the time they got to me, and I felt like it was very reactive instead of proactive. And we were throwing so much time, effort, resources, and money into making these nurses feel supported and enculturated. And it was never for nothing, but it was like, man, if we could put this same amount of time, effort, resources, and money into like preventing this or like preparing them better, wouldn't that make more sense? And that's where I started to think, okay, well, let's walk this back. Like, when does this start? And the reality is it starts in nursing school.
Yeah, that is true. Because I mean, that's kind of full circle on your experiences in Widener. And now full circle where you kind of want to make this better and realize that it goes back to nursing school itself.
It does. And while I'm very grateful for my education at Widener, I did not feel fully prepared to enter the nursing profession. And I don't think any new grad does feel 100% prepared.
Yeah. I don't think so either.
I certainly had the feeling that, well, I was a great student. I had like a 3.6 GPA, involved in all these things, like pretty accomplished for a student. Mm-hmm. Like from an academic perspective, I had been a high achiever. Academic achievement does not translate to clinical success in practice. And I learned that the hard way. And I think a lot of students learn that the hard way. Yep. And I really wish I had been prepared more to deal with the like true realities of healthcare in our country. Instead of just being hyper fixated on passing my state boards.
Right. Although that's kind of like the emphasis though, is like, we're just going to get you to pass your boards and you'll figure it out after that. You'll be fine.
That is exactly the mentality. And that is what I'm really passionate about changing.
Yeah.
And yes, my own personal experience informed my decision to go back to academia, but also seeing hundreds and hundreds of new grads come in and deal with the same exact experience and recognizing that perhaps my efforts could be even like more impactful if I went back into the academic environment and could be more proactive in this fight.
Yeah, I agree. I love when you mentioned that, you know, your GN residency program is a really great foundation. I never had a GN residency. I started school before it was like the big thing to do for hospitals. And I really wish at some points, like it's kind of a catch 22. I kind of wish I had one, but I'm really also glad that I didn't have one and kind of almost learned on the fly and really built resiliency and just like coming back again and like kind of doing the same thing over and over again, but trying to get better every day. I think at least some GN residencies have a better method of allowing the GN to, I don't want to say vent, but appropriately communicate their needs and issues in a way that they feel listened to and heard, where I never got any of that. I don't know if that would have benefited me either though. So I can't really say, but I do know that the GNs that I have been a part of their reflection seminar have felt either really valued and like listened to and stuff like that, or they've decided that this isn't for me. I don't think that where I'm working is a good fit for me. And then they kind of move on. That's kind of the lesser of the two evils. But I do think that the majority of the people really feel that it's a great thing to have. And then taking a step back, going from the GN residency to start in academic nursing. So how was that experience of like saying, okay, I'm going to go GN residency. You had to figure out that program, right? And then all of a sudden changing gears here. And I don't want to say too much because like I know you from that role, but I'm interested in how different it was and really how you figured it out of how to like teach your first course. Like, did someone say like, hey, this is how you do it? Or did you have to like jump in and be like, okay, we're going to make this up and I have this like tiered thing here and we're going to just pick and choose and kind of do it?
It was a little bit of everything. So remember, I did get my master's degree in those years during my coordinator role. So I gained a lot of like formal education at that time. My master's is in nursing education. So I had formal coursework on evaluation, on curriculum building, on classroom management, leadership. So I wasn't starting from scratch. And then my role in residency, I did a lot of classroom teaching. I had experience like managing a classroom from size of like 11 learners up to like 50 or 60 learners.
Awesome.
I had spoken at conferences, like I was comfortable in front, speaking in front of others. And I had gone through quite a bit of like leadership trainings during that time. So I brought all of that with me, like into my academic role. And I did receive a lot of support in my new role. I had a faculty mentor. I was able to access all the course materials from my predecessor. And so all of that like set me up for a solid start, but there certainly was still a humongous learning curve. And particularly because my first year of teaching academically full-time was during COVID. So everything was new and different. No one really knew what was going on. And I definitely didn't know what was going on.
Nope.
I also, though, didn't know any better. And so it kind of helped me out.
Yeah. I was going to say, that kind of is like a great thing to have, you know?
Yeah. And I always had like a really great balance of academic freedom to do things the way I wanted, but I had support when I didn't know what direction to go. I'd say that my biggest challenge transitioning to academia, and it still holds true now, 4 years later, is the wheels of academia turn slowly. So when I taught in nurse residency in the acute care setting, it was quick. If something didn't go well in my session for a group 1 month, I could change it for my next group that started 2 months later.
Yeah.
Didn't have a lot of time. Currently in the like curriculum model I'm teaching in, if I have a problem with some of my content today, I can fix that a year from now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a much slower turnaround time. And that's what contributes to our academia to practice gap. Practice is moving at the speed of light and academia is moving slowly. And so over time, the gap just becomes larger. And I definitely felt that like coming to academia, but I adapted and definitely not perfect, but have learned a lot along the way. And this is my fourth academic year teaching full time.
That's amazing. 4 years. I don't know how many years I've been teaching for. Maybe 7 or 8. I don't know. I'd have to go back. But I think that it's great that, at least from my perspective, that you've been able to make those changes, you know, at least better for the next year, even though it's a year later, right? At least you're able to do that. And it's not like, oh, we got to stay in the same pace in the same realm of things where it's never going to change. And we just have to like go forth with it until like a dean or somewhere decides that, oh, it's going to change now, you know? So in that time frame, though, you have also started your PhD.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me a little about that, because I've had questions with students where they want to know the differences between a DMP and a PhD. And I've kind of talked to that that extent with them. What made you decide to do your PhD? And what is your topic of choice?
So it was made very clear to me at the time of my hire that getting a terminal degree was an expectation of the role within 6 years. So it was never like, maybe I'll do this, maybe I won't. I knew that that was an expectation and that I was willing to do that to have this job that I love. And I have no regrets. My employer does really support that growth. I have a lot of like financials and scheduling support to make that degree happen. But I could have pursued any terminal degree of my choice, a DNP, a PhD. I could have even gone down like the EDD path. But ultimately, I landed on the PhD for a couple of reasons. At the time, I was 29 years old, no kids, and was like, if I'm going to do this, I want to go big and I want to get the terminal degree. And the one that I know offers me the most opportunity in academia, since that's where I choose to stay. I was very torn and highly considered a DNP because I really care about practice and I want to keep my hand in practice and know what's going on out there. I also know that research informs DNP work though. And I thought, well, if I get my PhD and if I really want to, I can get a DNP later.
Yeah.
So that's still on the table for me, but for now I'm focusing on my PhD.
Love it. I love it.
And I'm in my third year. I am wrapping up coursework in the spring and moving into dissertation. And my research topic is all about nursing transition to practice. So I'm looking to gain a better understanding of what our students experience as they move from the role of student to the role of nurse. And as of now, I'm looking at like a qualitative study to explore the expectations that nursing students have prior to entering practice and if those expectations come to fruition in their first year at the bedside.
Was there a purpose behind your choice of qualitative versus quantitative? Do you find yourself more as a qualitative researcher versus quantitative?
I respect both areas of research. I think they're both really important. I am just personally more qualitatively minded. If we think back to what I said about, like, I like connecting with people, that's part of why I went into nursing. Qualitative research really is about connecting. And then I'm not going to gloss over this. Statistics and I are not friends. And quantitative research requires a highly skilled statistician. Sometimes you can outsource that, but a lot of times the researcher has to do it themselves. And I have minimal interest in that.
You know what? Just like we talked about how you have to know where you need, where you want to fit in as a nurse. Similarly, you got to know where you're going to fit in as a nurse researcher, and statistics is rough.
I could talk a whole podcast episode about my journey with statistics. It is currently behind me and I am incredibly grateful, but qualitative research is what really piques my interest, and capturing through words and stories and dialogue what cannot be captured in numbers or a survey or some sort of instrument. That's what I really am all about.
I love that. I love that because I like quantitative. I'm really not that great at math. Let's start there. But for some reason, myself and statistics really got along because in my mind, it tells a story, right? But it tells the number story of like what we did. But I really do appreciate how the numbers match the experiences of people. And that's why I also love qualitative stuff as well, because you're not going to get, you know, people's viewpoints. You're not going to hear, you know, why they love something or why they hated something or why this really didn't work for them. And for example, if we want to study, you know, an app, for whatever reason, on patients' care, if they're not telling us why they hate it or why they love it, the numbers, in my opinion, don't matter, right? The numbers kind of matter, but at the end of the day, I don't know why they matter. So I'm with you. I think that, you know, my choice obviously was to stay in practice, so hence why my choice was more of a DMP. But in terms of bringing that research, you know, to the bedside, I'm looking forward to your research because I don't run a GN residency program. That's not my realm. But I am interested in why people come to work to a hospital and then also predictive values of why they're leaving hospitals. And I think that when you're hitting on this research, it not only tells you a story of what people are experiencing going into the nursing, but perhaps we're going to find out why they're leaving too by doing this research. So
yes,
I can't wait.
All of that. And I'd like to take this moment to just briefly discuss that, like, historically speaking, there has been some tensions between DNP and PhD prepared nurses. And just like I am passionate about closing the transition to practice gap, I am also passionate about finding ways for DNP prepared and PhD prepared nurses to join forces and use their complementary skill sets and knowledge base to like elevate the nursing profession instead of divide it. And that is another area of research that I hope to pursue.
I am also going to volunteer myself for that area of research because I'm selfish about that. But also because I'm in the same boat. We can't have, you know, in my role as in the hospital that I work for, I value really greatly done. That's not even a word. Really well-developed and well-executed research where it gives me what I need and I can build lit reviews on it, and then I can take that and say, this is how we need to change our practice. We got to do this now. Research historically is like 16 years behind, right? And so if there was a way even to start research, to analyze it and inform the DMP leaders, hey, this is what I found. It's not finalized yet, but it's looking, you know, this way. That might even be a really great case to make in terms of how we make the transitions from research to practice even smoother and quicker. Because I do think there's a huge lag time between that area. And also, I really hope one day that in academia, folks do also appreciate the DMP kind of at the same level as PhD. We completely understand that it's a completely different role. But I do think that there's value that can make a school of nursing or anywhere in academia much stronger with both parties involved working together to make those things more valuable for students.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And I think that we're getting there. DNPs are very present in academia much more now than they were before. And I think we're going to continue to head in that direction. And it's about like being strategic and knowing who has what educational preparation and can bring like a certain value or skill set and how that can complement each other rather than like butting up against each other.
Yes.
So I don't see any one degree better than the other. They're just different. And where we've struggled is capturing the strengths of each and using them together.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to do a transition here real quick. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that we've ever talked about it, but it's on your CV. And I really want to hear about being a volunteer counselor at Camp Dragonfly.
Oh, yeah.
I am like, what is that? When you mentioned civic engagement, I thought no better time to talk about why the importance of civic engagement is incredible. It is an incredible opportunity for nurses. Volunteerism is incredibly important. And also, how do we improve the local community that we serve, whether that's in the local community, meaning where I live, or the community where you travel to, you can make an impact. So tell me a little bit about why you chose to volunteer for this organization and what it is, because I have no clue. This is the first time I've heard of it, and I'm very interested.
Yeah. So Camp Dragonfly is a grief camp for children. It is sponsored by my local hospice organization, and that is the hospice organization that actually serves the hospital that I work for, which is how I originally learned about this program. So it's hosted annually, and it's for kids, I think, age 16 through like their teenage years, and it provides a weekend getaway, like at a summer camp, for children who have experienced significant loss in their lives. And so that is sometimes parents, siblings, very close grandparents, friends, any child that has experienced significant loss and grief within the past calendar year is welcome to come to this camp. And it's a very well-run program. I have to give Hospice of Central PA so much respect and credit for doing this. And it's been a longstanding service of theirs. I volunteer in that program and have been a big buddy where I am paired with a child. And that is my buddy for the weekend. And where I go, they go. And frequently the pairing is attempted to like match your experience with grief and loss. So I've done it once, and then like there was some hiatus because of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
But I still look to volunteer with them in the future. And, it is, does require a bit of a commitment. I've had to attend like trainings on childhood grief, and there, is a lot of like formalities and like, you know, background checks and fingerprinting and all of the things to ensure the safety of the campers. But I have found it to be very rewarding. And I'm not a peds like nurse. I've never had interest in peds, but this is an opportunity for me to like connect with children in need, like in my community, and serve them in a way that I'm not necessarily a nurse, but just a fellow human who has had a shared experience, and let me help you walk through it.
Yeah. That's amazing. I've heard of, you know, there's a, some camp that does a program, not with grief or through a hospice organization, but does it through heart transplants.
Yeah.
And a person was looking for a volunteer this summer, and I couldn't commit to it, but I was like, well, this sounds like a great opportunity. But maybe if it's a weekend, like, that sounds very fun. I don't know if I would even be a good fit, but it sounds fun in terms of supporting, you know, children that have lost something in their life. Because we see a lot of that where I work in neuroscience, right? So you have some devastating injury happen, and sometimes, and more recently, probably within the last 5 years, are more of parents having strokes, having head bleeds, and having their kids come in to see them. And that's not easy. We do have a Child Life, which is a program that somebody comes by and they support the children of families with activities, with just different understanding tools. But I've always wondered what happens to those kids after something happens to their family member, right? So this sounds probably like a great opportunity for that too. So awesome.
Yeah, we can talk more about it sometime. I'll try to recruit you.
You probably just did. It's fine. I just have to make sure that I have the availability on my calendar for the summertime. But keep me in mind. So I think the biggest thing that I'm interested in talking to you about, not that your career is not exceptional and all that, but in 2022, you decided to go to Africa. And when I talk to you about it, you're just like, yeah, I'm just going. I'm like, okay, bye. Have fun, right? I have a feeling, though, that there's a significant purpose behind it. Obviously, the theme of the day, I think, is civic engagement. But I do believe that this organization, Nurses with Purpose Medical Missions, was much more than just a trip to Africa. And I want you to tell the story of that. So I'm going to let you have the mic for a while.
Okay.
Let me know if you want me to chime in. But I'm interested in hearing the full story of this. And I'm really sure that our guests are too, our listeners.
Yeah, happy to share. Feel free to throw in questions as I go. This story kind of starts back in like 2018, 2019. I started really thinking about like what else I wanted to do with my nursing career. And I loved to travel internationally and felt that maybe I could put those two things together. And I had known people that had gone on medical mission trips, but I didn't know a lot about it. So I started doing like casual searching. And then in 2019, I had some pretty significant events in my personal life. I lost both of my grandparents within like a 3-week period of each other. They were very important figures in my life, and they were both very philanthropic people, and they were also world travelers. And so this thought that already was swirling around in my brain kind of got emphasized with their loss and feeling like this would be a wonderful way to honor the people that they were and to use my own like skill set. So I started looking into different medical missions trips, realized that there was a lot of barriers to pursuing medical missions. I really had to take an inventory of my personal values and like what I wanted to accomplish on these trips. Mm-hmm. I'm not a particularly religious person. And so traveling with a church or a religious organization, I have no issues with those groups, but it just was not a fit for my personal perspective. And then I also wanted to travel with a group that was nurse-led. I feel that nurses can do so much on these trips, and I am willing to do whatever's needed, but I did not want to sit at a table for 8, 9, 10 hours doing manual blood pressures all day. I felt that my skill set could be further utilized. So I had to put the planning on pause during COVID because most of these organizations were halted with travel. But I was able to revisit it and plan my trip for May of 2022. I did travel with Nurses with Purpose, which is the organization I landed on, based out of Atlanta, and it is a nurse-led organization. There was a pretty lengthy application process. I did have to interview for that. There were references. It was a very legit thing.
Yeah.
And I got myself on a payment plan paid for the trip, my flights, all that. And it felt like next thing I knew, I was boarding a flight to Johannesburg. And yeah, the trip did absolutely change my life in so many ways. I traveled alone. I met my group when I arrived in South Africa, but there is something like very humbling about getting on an airplane by yourself and traveling 16 and a half hours halfway across the world.
That's a long flight.
I remember like looking at the TV screen, like, you know, on the headrest in front of you, and you can like map where you are in the world. And I'm just watching myself like getting further and further from America. And I had traveled internationally plenty of times prior, but it had always been for leisure and it had always been with someone else. And so this was like a very different experience. And I landed in South Africa in complete darkness because in South Africa, they do something called load shedding, where the government has the power to cut electricity to cities and neighborhoods whenever they choose. And so at the time that I landed, there was no electricity where I was staying. So had to climb many flights of stairs because there was not an elevator. And it was a very like telling welcome that like, I am not home. Like, this is a new place.
Yeah.
But I met my group and I was one of six nurses on my particular mission. They came from all across the country in the United States. And I was there for 11 days. So I'm going to keep going if that's okay.
Keep going. Absolutely. We have all the time in the world. So you keep going.
The mission was very community-based. So we were not in clinics. We were not in a hospital setting. We were basically a mobile urgent care.
That's awesome.
Going to different communities, setting up our stations and meeting people with whatever needs they had. And we used whatever equipment and meds and tools we had available to us. So typically we would set up three stations. The first was intake, gathering like a medical history, hand hygiene with the patients, getting like a height and weight, and like a general sense of what their presenting complaint was. This was also an opportunity to kind of like triage what was going on. We'd move on to a vital sign table, which was a full set of vital signs and a finger stick blood sugar. A little bit more of an in-depth like assessment at this time based on their complaint. And then all of that data was pushed on to the third station, which was consultation and treatment. And at that station, we would provide medications, any kind of treatment or therapy that we were able to provide, and a lot of education. So we did have translators available to us. South Africa has, I think, 11 national languages. English is one of them, but not every patient spoke English. And we would treat anyone that came through that day. And that could be infants through patients that were very elderly, treated a lot of the same complaints, a lot of arthritis, back pain, neck pain, knee pain. I wrapped a lot of joints. I put a lot of lidocaine patches on people. I gave away a lot of ibuprofen during those days. But some more serious things as well, episodes of syncope, some like very significant hypertension among these patients, challenges with blood sugar management, and some cardiac issues. The ones that were like most uncomfortable for me were pregnant women presenting because I don't have any experience in OB.
That would scare me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it scared me. And then really using our knowledge and the tools that we did have. So one of my biggest takeaways from this experience is the unmatched value of a nurse's assessment. We get very used to our tools and our gadgets. in modern American healthcare. I love an EKG. I love a full rainbow of labs. I want the monitor. I want the data. And I didn't have that there. And so I really had to rely on my eyes, my ears, my assessment skills, and my gut and what I thought was going on. So, you know, if someone came to me in the U.S. and said they had heart palpitations and would get dizzy sometimes, one of the first things I would want to do is hook them up and get a 12-lead EKG.
Yeah, for sure.
I didn't have that there. And so what I had to do was a very thorough cardiac assessment and listen to all of the cardiac points on the chest, a full 1 minute apical heart rate, you know, all pulses, all these things that I already am doing, but I use it to like validate or increase what I already think I know from the EKG.
Yeah.
So relying on my assessment skills and fine tuning those assessment skills was a very key piece to my clinical journey there.
That's awesome.
We did refer a handful of patients to the clinic in South Africa to get further medical treatment, people in hypertensive crisis. There was someone that I'm fairly certain was in rapid AFib. And recognizing that we didn't have the medications to like treat them in the field. So we would refer them on.
I was curious of if there was a clinic or if there are, you know, other hospitals around the area that you would triage them to if in the event, you know, your clinic had a patient that we really couldn't handle this.
Yeah. South Africa is a public healthcare system. They also have a private healthcare system, but the people that we were serving mostly accessed the public healthcare system. And we would always know like the closest public clinic to refer them to. However, it was up to the patient if they chose to pursue that treatment or not. And that was challenging because there's a lot of social and cultural problems in that country regarding access to healthcare. And referring someone to the clinic often meant that that was a day they could not work or a day that they could not care for their children. Or they had lack of transportation to get to that clinic. And there's no guarantee that if they go to the clinic that they will be seen that day. It is on a first come, first serve basis. So lots of barriers to overcome. And a lot of distrust in the medical system there.
Yeah.
Which is why it was important for us to have a consistent presence in these communities. So Nurses with Purpose goes to the same villages and communities every time. That way there can be continued and building of trust.
Yeah.
And a sustainable model, which was something that was really important to me. We weren't showing up one day, showing off our nursing skills and knowledge and leaving and never coming back, because many of these conditions are chronic and require frequent management. And I believe that Nurses with Purpose does that well compared to some.
That's really great to hear, because I do think that that's so important in terms of building trust with a community that doesn't know you, right? Knows the organization, but I could imagine that, you know, let me backtrack here. There's a lot of implementation science research done in Africa for purposes because the communities need to trust the person doing the intervention to help build whatever they need to have, whether it's malaria nets, whether it's a medication, things like that. And I would fear that if I volunteered for something like that, that it would just go away and that it wouldn't be sustainable. Because I love when something is, it works for the community, it works for the unit you're on, and it also impacts them, and it also is sustainable at the same time. So that's great to hear.
Sustainability was one of the things I was really searching for when I looked for an organization, and it was something that I struggled to find.
Interesting.
And so Nurses with Purpose is doing a great job with that. And I really respect the connections that they've made with the communities there. And I could feel it when I was there. People were waiting. They knew that on the third Thursday of the month, the nurses from America come and they set up here. And so they would wait for
them. So sweet. I'm sorry. I love that.
So we ended up serving in a variety of communities. We visited a orphanage with HIV positive children. And we also got to learn a little bit about like the spiritual and cultural healing practices in South Africa. And then the times in between, we did have the opportunity to be tourists and like take in and appreciate the South African culture and do shopping and like various tourism things. I am very grateful for my entire experience there, but I will say that one of the challenges I had was code switching between being a volunteer and being a tourist. The way our schedule worked is like we would work at a, like clinics, you know, 2 or 3 days in a row, and then we'd have a day off and we could go ziplining and shopping and whatever, you know, out to dinner, whatever you wanted to do.
Yeah.
And then the next day I'd be back to volunteering. And I struggled with doing both.
Yeah.
Had I had an opportunity to only volunteer or only be a tourist, I think I would have been fine. But I had a lot of like cognitive and emotional dissonance with doing both, especially like interweaving them.
Mm-hmm.
So the wealth gap is incredibly present in South Africa. And while I am very much a middle-class citizen here, I am very much upper class in South Africa. And like being treated as such and having access to like higher class things, think like, you know, 5-star steakhouses and brand name, you know, shopping experiences and all of that. I couldn't like get over the fact that in the morning I was serving people who were like sleeping on dirt and had no access to running water. And then in the evening I would be at these like bougie places.
Right.
So that is not like an insult to anyone or anything. It was just an unanticipated challenge that I faced while I was there. And if I ever choose to pursue medical missions again, which I believe that I will, I am going to keep that in mind, that should I choose to engage as a tourist in the community that I'm going to, I must do that either first or last, but not mix it in. Separate those two things from each other.
I mean, I can only imagine that, you know, yes, it's offered to you, but it's probably not, you're probably not told what this will mean, right? Because who can really say that? And I think that those things really are eye-opening, number one. But number two, I feel like if you didn't reflect on that and say to yourself, yeah, you know, that was a period of time where I really struggled because of how this is and this is, I feel like that probably would not be of benefit to either party involved, right? And I think that when you mentioned that, you know, I went to Australia a long time ago, and we were able to do a rainforest tour. Now, I wasn't a nurse at the time. I was a lacrosse player. And we flew into Melbourne, but then got to experience the Aborigines in a touristy way. And when I more recently learned about the history of Australia and what the Aborigines were affected by, it kind of changed my perspective about how I experienced Australia. It's not the same as what actually is Australia. And it took a long time for me to really say, oh, that's what it was. Because I was 18. I had no clue what anything meant outside of my little area of Philadelphia where I went to school. And you know, didn't really engage with other cultures like that on a regular basis. So I think that when you mention those things, I do think it's really important to mention those things out loud, because number one, what if nurses want to do that? Number two, what if nurses also want to experience something like that in the United States? Because certainly you don't have to go to, you know, volunteer on a mission trip to Africa. By all means, it sounds amazing. But you could go work in like an inner city hospital and mm-hmm. treat a lot of folks that are way different than you that need the same amount of help. And I'm sure that that is also an area of cognitive dissonance, the same way, well, similar ways, I'm not going to say it's the same way as what you're describing happened to you on your mission trip.
Right. So that was like a challenge that I faced while I was there, but it certainly did not like taint my experience in any kind of negative way. I am very grateful for that experience. I've been considering like if, how, and when I wish to pursue another medical mission trip. And I encourage all nurses to just think about like maybe if or how they can engage in this kind of care. And it doesn't require, like you said, going halfway across the world. I think that there are a lot of opportunities locally. And it's about finding like what matters to you and how you wish to give back. So that trip really redefined my life and like my way I look at my role as a nurse in many ways. And this is really my first time like being able to publicly share about it. So I really appreciate having your platform.
Absolutely. I was very excited when you wanted to share it because I mean, it's your own story, right? I think things like this are for a nurse's journey, no matter where you start and where you end up in your career, you're going to have stories of all sorts of you know, things. And when we first talked about your journey to Africa, when you came back, it was like this big thing for you, right? I don't know how else to describe it to people because if you weren't there in the break room, right? Like Brie all of a sudden was this changed person. And I was like, okay, like how was your trip? And you're like, it was great. Is basically how I would emphasize, you know, the before and after effect of a mission trip like that. And so for you to say like, no, I think I want to influence other nurses on your podcast with a story, have at it. You know, I think it's great that you were able to offer that to so many people that will listen to this episode. So yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to do so.
Anything else on your journey of nursing that you want to discuss? What's next for you?
I'm still working towards this PhD, girl. That's the that's the next thing. I don't foresee myself going anywhere in terms of academia. I am very like happy and comfortable teaching. I love connecting with my students. I'm taking on some new challenges with like new classes that I'm teaching and things like that. But in general, I wish to maintain my role in academic teaching for nursing students. And then something that just didn't really come up in our conversation is I do still practice. I maintain like a per diem position.
We did not talk about that. Yeah.
At the hospital that I started at. And I'm very grateful for like a flexible position that allows me to pick up time like when I can. But that is a real cornerstone of my career and my practice is being able to remain like connected to the bedside.
Yeah.
And this is not at all in judgment of people who choose to leave their bedside practice, but being so like young and early in my career, when I entered education, I just knew that it wasn't going to benefit me to like get far from the practice world. And it has informed the way I teach so significantly. And especially since I want to focus on preparing my students for the real world of practice, I need to know what's happening in the real world of practice.
Yeah.
And there's no better way for me to do that than doing it myself. So moving forward, what's next for me is maintaining that bedside practice, whatever, wherever, and however that looks like, but being able to care for patients, on my own and walk through the nursing process and like keep my skills sharp is something that is really valuable to me. So I'm going to keep practicing. I'm going to keep doing the PhD thing. I'm going to keep teaching. No plans for another medical mission trip yet, but I do believe that's in my future one day.
Yeah, that'll be, you know, The Adventures of Brie as a new series of whatever you want to do with that, right?
Yeah, that'll come after the PhD. I have to be realistic here.
Fine. That's fair. That's really fair. Yeah, I'm also glad that you mentioned that you still do maintain clinical practice because I do see the difference between folks I meet all over the country. It's nothing to do with any one particular place that are still within practice at the bedside, or they have a role that impacts the bedside nurse, and how it fulfills and really creates a very comprehensive approach to teaching someone, as opposed to folks that have been outside of that realm for so many years and then the when you're trying to collaborate with them or something, it's just missing. There's not that grasp of, oh yeah, I noticed that too. That's a problem. We should probably work on that and fix it. Instead of just saying, oh, well, is it in the literature? So if it's not, I'm not going to work on it. So there's that. And I like too that, you know, as a full-time, you know, professor, that you are also able to maintain a clinical practice and still work outside of that rigorous academia life, because it's a lot. I mean, teaching clinical,
it takes a lot of flexibility and well thought out planning. And I can't emphasize enough, like, the support from my clinical leadership. They understand that I have another job and that's they awesome. Work with me to ensure that I can do both. It's not impossible. I'm living proof of that, but I do think that there's work to be done in the world of nursing to ensure that this is like more of a possibility for our faculty, because it's hard.
It's really hard. It's hard. It's hard for me. You know, I'm very lucky as well that I can teach when I teach and still maintain my full-time job and then have a quote unquote day off. But I still have to do the hours, right? So I still have to work 2 12-hours, 2 8-hours to accommodate the 6 or 7 hour day of teaching. Very fortunate that my leadership allows me to do that. But I think for other folks, it's super difficult until we kind of, you know, see more things like within the FTE practice realm, right? How does that look like? How does that operate? Or, you know, can your job just be something where you're not always present on the unit for as your primary role, right? Is there some other areas that you can kind of mishmash and teach and do your primary job and do all these other things that really help impact nursing as well? So we'll see. Well, thank you so much. This has been great. I hope you liked it.
Yes, I did. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Absolutely. Fun fact of the day as we round up this episode, I have not recorded a podcast episode in quite some time. I paused the podcast because I was finishing up my doctoral work and was really too busy to sit here for an hour and record with somebody. But also behind the scenes, there's a lot more that goes on between it. And I knew that Bree wanted to record an episode. And I was like, here we are. We're going to just figure it out because I haven't done this in a long time. So well, thanks for your patience with me as well.
You didn't miss a beat. Your hosting still comes very naturally. And we found a time on a Sunday afternoon before the Birds game to make it happen.
Go Birds. And if anybody didn't know, we cheer for the Philadelphia Eagles around here. So you may try to like another team, but I might judge you. So, all right, Bree. It's nice talking to you. We'll do this again sometime. You know, maybe with your PhD research, maybe something else I'm going to come on a podcast for, and we'll see you soon.